Thanks, Mark. We're going to report a little bit on some committee activity and the potential for a BIF guideline, but I think whether there will be a guideline or not will kind of depend on the discussion. The committee has started to address this and talk about it a little bit, but we're mainly here interested in hearing from people in the audience, whether they are in the academic area or producers or breed association staff or other people dealing with this, to get your feedback on what whether BIF ought to, at this point, make some kind of recommendation to into the guidelines about evaluation of clones. Cloning is going on, and the price seems to be declining, and so the opportunity for that technology to be utilized will potentially increase, but it's occurring still on a relatively small scale. I know a couple of breed associations, two breed associations were recommended on the committee, and I polled them about the number of clones. I believe the Angus Association has somewhere on the order of 50. Clone animals that are registered in their association, and the Simmental Association would have a little less than half that that have been reported to the association for registry. And so there's a little bit going on, and depending on who you talk to, there may be more going on in the near future potentially. There are probably some legitimate reasons for cloning, as maybe some illegitimate reasons for cloning. But in terms of the impact of genetic improvement of beef cattle, that some producers, at least that I've talked to about it, see the opportunity to provide a backup to a bull that they assign some value to, that potentially a bull that could potentially be injured or die, to have a backup copy available to be used for semen production. Certainly some interest in some areas on being able to access this proven elite sire in a natural service setting, whether it's an extensive environment where AI is more challenging or just potentially to maybe usable natural service among partners, for example, or something of those sort of things. And then certainly an interest has been in cloning females, and generally that just the idea to produce more out of a particular cow. So part of the interest in BIF providing a guideline is that we know that, and there's been some discussion, I don't know that what Dave Daly said was exactly right about the idea of how genetic evaluation became a marketing a tool and what that sort of did to genetic evaluation, but I think we all agree that EPDs certainly are a powerful tool, but they're also a very powerful tool in terms of marketing. And so the value of a clone, and probably more specifically the value of a progeny of a clone, will in the marketplace be determined by the EPDs of those calves. That is, if you use a clone and the EPDs that are produced on the calves out of that clone will have a big impact on what you're able to sell those calves for. And so for those reasons, breeders have questions about how associations will provide EPDs on clones, and then from there what the progeny of clones will have. At least two breed associations that I've talked to, Angus and Simmental, have some sort of an interim policy. And I think in both cases they were a relatively ad hoc kind of a policy that was developed on the fly, and some could say that would be what we're doing here today as well. But at least one other association and really a couple have expressed some desire for BIF to weigh in on this. Of course, since the history of BIF many years ago, one of its key roles was to develop guidelines for uniform programs. And so here's an issue that potentially is being handled in a couple different ways. And they would look to BIF for guidance in terms of what they ought to implement in their particular breed association. That, depending on how this would be handled, it is going to require some time in programming for their record system and their evaluation system and those sort of things, and they really don't want to do it more times than they have to, and so on. So there's been a request to BIF to look at this and perhaps make a recommendation if appropriate. Now, I think what really the discussion comes down to that is this, and how you feel about this assumption, and whether we feel that this is an assumption that we can make at this time, that the actual modeling becomes fairly trivial, but it comes down to the idea of the clones having identical chromosomes, and do you feel that they have equivalent genetic effects? And again, there's discussion on that. I'm not aware of, and I've tried to talk with various people that work in this area and read the literature. There's no empirical evidence that that is not the case. There's also no empirical evidence that it is the case so far, that the assumption would be that same chromosomes would result in same genetic values and same impact, whether you, for example, bred a cow to the donor or if you used a clone bull and used the semen out of those. But that would be an assumption. If you believe that assumption, then going on makes it pretty easy. We can't test that assumption yet. In a perfect world, we'd have a few thousand calves out of several families of clone bulls, and we'd be able to analyze that data and look at the resemblance among families and those sort of things and answer that question clearly. And I hope that in just a few years, maybe we will be able to do that. But in the meantime, we can potentially make a recommendation to guide those associations, what they do in the short term. But I think any guideline that's made here, and truly any guideline that's BIF passes is always subject to revision as more data is known, as we learn more about that particular area. USDA dairy cattle, for example, has basically made that assumption that they will treat clones as identical. They will if they have a family of clones, per se, a group of bulls or a group of cows that are all a donor and its clones, that they select the animal with the highest reliability or the one that has the most data, and then would assign that value to all the animals in the family. Now they've moved to a genomic prediction, or at least investigating a genomic prediction, which would use SNP data or SNP genotypes to evaluate those animals. And of course, then when clones have the same SNPs as they do, then they end up with basically the same predictive transmitting abilities. Now, regardless of how BIF might recommend to evaluate the progeny and that sort of thing, I think it's pretty clear at this time that measurements taken on clone animals are not very useful. That maybe some of you have had experience with clones. We've had one clone born many years ago. I say many years ago, 5 or 6 years ago now at Kansas State University, that still remains. She's survived to this point at least. And there's definitely some unique environmental things that are a result of that type of creation, if you will. That the environment, those animals don't develop in exactly the same way themselves, and so a birth weight or a weaning weight is probably not a relevant indicator of their genetic merit, nor the indicator of the donor that went to that clone. Certainly some health issues that have been identified, and hopefully research will advance that'll lessen those and make that less of a management issue than it is, but for now that there's really no use in worrying about the birth weight or the weaning weight of an individual clone. In most cases in the beef situation, although this wouldn't always necessarily be the case in dairy, but in beef, the animals that have been selected for cloning, the ones selected to be clone donors, are relatively proven animals. They're ones that have come to the top for some reason or have some particular value because of usually the progeny that they've generated. Now, if you follow the assumption that animals are genetically identical, then progeny of clone bulls, the evaluation procedures would be fairly straightforward. That in that particular case, if you have a calf that is sired by a clone to a bull, that the genetic equivalence would say that the calf might as well have been sired by the donor. And that in that case, while we would want the association to track the individual animal, the individual clone that was actually the sire, so that later on we could use that in research, in terms of genetic evaluation, that calf out of the clone sire would have the same EPD as had it been sired by the original donor. Does that make sense? That basically you would say that a clone bull and a donor bull would basically be the same bull, and there wouldn't be any difference. And so the calf sired by the clone bull would have the same EPD and accuracy as if it were sired by the donor bull. And again, I think the tracking is important so that later we could revisit this and do an evaluation to see if our assumptions were correct. It's a little bit different if we have a clone female, because if you think about, you know, we said that on a clone animal we're not going to consider the phenotype, the birth weight, the weaning weight of the clone itself, and we also probably don't want to consider the milk production of the clone itself because of the things that would have resulted from her growth and development. And so when you have a calf produced by a clone cow, like the ones that we've had produced, that those calves would have received the same genes as if that calf were born to the donor, but the maternal effect, the milk production, is different. That particular calf, nursing the clone, is somewhat equivalent to nursing a recip. An animal of, for now, unknown particular background in terms of its maternal effect. We know the genetic maternal contribution that that cow would have received that would influence her milk production, but the environmental part of that, which is significant, fairly relatively low heritability trait, that there would be a different maternal effect. Same way with the permanent environment effect that we would model in that particular evaluation. Again, the permanent environment would be due to the clone, which would be could be considerably different than the permanent environment if the calf had actually nursed its own, the donor cow. And so a way to model that really wouldn't be any different than the way you would model an ET calf produced from that donor's egg, that in some ways a clone cow becomes a recipient that produces the egg itself of the original donor. And so that calf would be modeled just like an ET. And most associations would not use the phenotypes, the birth weights and the weaning weights and so on the calves out of that clone cow. Some would and identify which of the clones was actually produced the calf, very much the way some associations are tracking recipients and putting that into their model. So I would suspect that however an association would handle an ET calf would follow in that sort of thing. So in summary, if BIF were to make a recommendation based on the assumption that clones were genetically equivalent, the EPD and potentially the accuracy of the clone would be equivalent to the donor. There was some discussion among committee members that potentially a compromise would be that it would be the same EPD, but the accuracy would be sort of artificially reduced by post-processing or something like that. That after the analysis was run, and if you went with this particular approach, that there would basically be one set of EPDs and one accuracy, and that would be used to describe both the donor and all the clones that would exist. But some have expressed concern about the accuracy more than the EPD, reflecting maybe the lack of knowledge we have about the ultimate transmitting ability of a clone, and maybe thought that at a compromise in a reduced accuracy or maybe sort of a back solution, low accuracy, pedigree estimate accuracy sort of thing might be appropriate. So that would be one thing that would certainly be worthy of discussion. For a clone bull, as I mentioned, it's pretty straightforward. For a clone cow, that when you take out the maternal and the permanent environment, it effectually reduces down to an embryo transfer. And then once we go on from that, then the future generations, the grand progeny, the great grand progeny of clones, then as long as there's not another, would just go on be evaluated normally, with the effects the same as going on. So, committee members that provided input, and we appreciate Sally and Dr. Claus, Wade Schaefer, and Susan, Mark, and Allison, very helpful. I also want to acknowledge Dale Van Vleck, who has some writings on the topic that I read that were particularly helpful, and about 10 years ago had a paper in the Journal of Animal Science that sort of addressed some of these things. And I wasn't aware, but Dr. Kenneth Menders mentioned that Bruce Golden had also given some input on this at a BIF meeting some years ago, although I don't believe a guideline resulted from it. But I'm certainly interested in that as well. So with that, what I think the committee would like to do is sort of open up for a discussion about what those of you think about is now the time for BIF to make a guideline, or should we refrain from a guideline and sort of leave the associations to do what they think is best in their situation, and if there is a guideline, you know, how would you recommend that be done? David. The question was, what would the current breed association evaluation for twins, that sort of thing. As far as I know, every breed association would discard the weights, birth weights, weaning weights, that sort of thing, as twins. And I think they are treated as full sibs, but with no relationship among them, other than just full sibs. Right, those were modeled, yeah. That some of you may remember that there was a bull, I believe it's Lex Sires, it's been some time ago now, but it was a pair of bulls where basically one male embryo went in and two bull calves came out, that the embryo spontaneously split, as they sometimes do, And both of those bulls were then progeny tested. They were part of, I think it's select sires. And initially, of course, their pedigree estimates were equivalent. That as the bulls were used, there was some sampling factor and they deviated a little bit, but as accuracy increased, they came certainly within the margin of error to a very similar EPD profile in the end. Now, and I think that does give you some guidance about what might happen, but again, we have it with somatic cell clone, it's a little different process, and so there's been some concern about that sort of thing. Yeah, I think that's what was Wade's input, is that the ones that they have and they don't have a large number, that they would treat them as the same. They're not making the, and I don't know if they're to the point yet where they have cloned females that are producing offspring, that he was basically treating them as the same animal and wasn't accounting for different maternal effects or that sort of thing. It's just a quick adjustment to get them into the evaluation and that sort of thing. So they would probably be even maybe a little more liberal in the way they were doing it, at least in the short term. But certainly was interested in coming up with a guideline. Other suggestions, other comments or concerns? Really do. If you have other opinions, please do feel free to express them. I think what we'll do then is, as a committee, then reconvene and kind of discuss a little more, and then present a guideline maybe for the BIF mid-year meeting. But feel free to make comments. And if the other thing too is, I should provide my email address. And if you would like to sort of provide comments for the record or that sort of thing, or give input, you may know one of the people on the committee, and if you know any of those people, you can provide input directly to them, or if you can provide it to me. If you've got a pen, my email is dmoser, dmoser@ksu.edu, and feel free to email me any comments or suggestions that you might have, and we'll certainly take those into consideration before we present anything to the board. Yes, again, it is dmoser@ksu.edu. EDU.
All right, let's thank Stan for going on.